The following is a paid program. 1590 WAKR and its owners, the Rubber City Radio Group, are not responsible for its content.
Money Talks, the show that gives you the tools to navigate a challenging economy, help you build and protect your wealth, and provide timely news and information to manage your money. Here's the host of Money Talks, Richard Peterson, president of Capital Financial Group on 1590 WAKR.
Will, good morning to you.
Good morning. Isn't it beautiful?
Are we live or is this Memorex?
you have to actually talk. You can't just listen.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is. When you're in my position where I'm kind of running the board, I start to listen to the show and I'm like, oh, that's right. I'm supposed to push buttons. But we have to. But it's 4th of July. Happy 4th of July.
Yeah. Here we are.
And we finally got a no rain day. Woo!
Nice weather, you know.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how the weather gods actually look at this. What? Memorial Day was nice. Yeah. Then we got a month of rain. So now we got a nice weekend for 4th of July.
Oh,
are we going to get,
we got to wait until, Labor Day weekend in order to have another nice day? What's going on with that? Yeah, that's not right.
But we were out yesterday and seeing all the people out there. It's just like, you know, everybody just came out in droves. They've been so locked up for.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like cabin fever in the winter. That's what we were having, rain cabin fever. Yeah. I was out. I actually did yard work yesterday for the first time. Because you can.
Yes.
Because you're not walking in like a giant swamp out there. Yeah, crazy though. Crazy.
It really is. But happy 4th of July, everyone. Good morning. And I am your host, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. This is Money Talks. Thanks for joining us on this Saturday morning, the first Saturday of July, July the 4th, 2015, as we take a look at the markets. Now, the markets weren't open yesterday and Friday, but as of the close on Thursday, not good. Not a good week for the markets as a whole. We saw the Dow Jones was down 27 points to close at 17,730. Now, what this means, I'll just give you a little indicator. The Dow opened on January the 2nd at 17,823. That makes us negative for the year. Yes, we are 6 months into the year, and we are negative for the year. The same can be said almost for the S&P 500 that was down just under a point, close to 2076. It is just slightly over that positive mark. It was negative earlier in the week. And the NASDAQ, well, it was down just under 4 points, close to 5,009. We were concerned that it was going to go negative for the year also, but it is positive just a little over 5% for the year. Natural gas was down a nickel to close at $2.77. Look at what's happening to oil. We see West Texas Intermediate down $1.41 to close at $55.52. We saw that the Brent crude was down $1.75, closed at $60.32. Gas futures were down 3 cents to close at $2 even. And at the pumps, I saw everything from $2.75 to $2.84 a gallon. We saw gold up $4.30, closed out the week at $11.67.80, and silver was up 9 cents to close at $15.66 an ounce. In the bond market, we saw the 2-year bond close at 0.62%, the 10-year 2.38%, and the 30-year 3.19%. The news in the past week, the results of the Institute for Supply Management's National Manufacturing Survey showed that the manufacturing activity expanded for the 30 consecutive month in June. Manufacturing PMI rose to 53.5 in June from 52.8 in May. We also saw the Commerce Department reported that construction spending rose 0.8% month over month in May, while annually the increase was 8.2%. Spending on private construction was up 0.9% compared to the previous month, with residential and non-residential construction spending rising 0.3%. We also saw that the Case-Shiller Index for the price survey showed that their 20-city composite house price index rose 0.3% month over month in April. Now, that was smaller than the 0.8% increase in March. House prices were up an unadjusted 4.9% year over year, slower than the 5.4% increase that was expected. And the big jobs number that came out this week on Thursday instead of Friday because of the holiday, we saw the U.S. showing another notable increase in the month of June. The Labor Department released the unemployment report showing 223,000 jobs, modestly below the addition of the 230,000 that was unexpected. But the unemployment rate fell to a seven-year low. We saw it fall from 5.5% to 5.3%. Now, again, a good reason for that, the lack of participation for people looking for jobs. What we also saw is the labor participation rate also nosed down in the month of May, which was part of the biggest reason for the unemployment rate falling to the 5.3%. So numbers were decent. Basically, it was kind of that Goldilocks number where the number wasn't too soft, nor was it too hot, thereby...
Just right.
Yeah, and I say that because this is keeping the Fed on the sidelines from raising interest rates.
You know, I wondered about that. When they were talking, they've always said when employment, unemployment or whatever numbers hit a certain percentage, then they're going to raise interest rates. So I thought that might incentivize people to never hire too many people because they want to keep that cheap money coming. But I don't know.
Well, it's funny because they kept saying that it was tied to a number. When we get to this, when we get to this, when we get to this. Yeah. Well, we've gone way past that. And so they got off of that.
Okay.
And now they're just saying according to economic data, thereby not putting themselves in a corner because we're way below where they said they were going to raise
interesting.
Rates.
Interesting. So they let that just go. Okay.
Absolutely.
Which causes that, what do they call it, uncertainty in the market?
Uncertainty in the market. Uh-huh. Markets like to know what's going on.
Yeah. So do we, actually, in our personal finance, like our little part of the world, you know, like how much is it going to cost me to fill my gas tank up? Huh. And how much is it going to cost for a head of lettuce? And eggs, I think, is the thing that's going up right now.
Yeah. And we look at that, and, of course, some of the uncertainty out there. We have Greece that's having their referendum vote tomorrow. You know, to quickly talk about Greece, first of all, you may hear things like, you know, the Greece economy is so small. How does it really affect the rest of the world? It's smaller than a lot of the states here in the United States. It's smaller, it's smaller, it's smaller. It's only 2% of the European Union. Well, it's not so much Greece. It's the contagion that would worry people out there. Basically, if Greece were to exit the European Union, what happens to places like Italy? What happens to places like Spain? Portugal, these are the concerns that people have. Are they going to look for new deals? Are they going to talk about exiting the European Union also? My first thoughts are probably not. What we're looking at is that the latest polls show that most of the Greeks want to stay in the European Union. The problem is that, you know, Germany has a little bit of a problem of having to pay for the early young age retirees in Greece. They don't have a good tax collection system. Most of what's been negotiated again this year, as it has over the past 5 years, it's kicking the can down the road. It's austerity. It is the creditors are asking Greece for a plan of how they're going to pay this money back. Well, you know, Greece isn't even looking at, they're looking at the spending side. They need to look at the income side, which is the tax revenue side. How do they get people back to work? How do they reduce the government regulations so businesses can grow? These are the things that they have to address, not the fact of let's change that 10-year bond into a 40-year bond so that we have more time to pay it back. I don't know how this is going to resolve itself. But another thing to look at, of course, we were hit this past week with Puerto Rico. Now, the island's debt is four times that of Detroit. As Greece's, four times, $72 billion. As Greece's debt crisis grows increasingly dire, another territory, Puerto Rico, has admitted to some major financial woes. What exactly is happening in Puerto Rico? Well, their governor has made a worrisome announcement last week that the island cannot pay back its $72 billion in debt. What we find is that the governor and his staff, according to the Times, are seeking to defer payments for as long as 5 years, while also possibly seeking concessions from many of the creditors. This debt is not payable, the governor said. There is no other option. I would love to have an easier option. This is not politics. This is math. Okay, English, please. Well, Puerto Rico is in the midst of a decade-long economic struggle fueled by years of recession and slow economic growth. As a result, its government has taken out massive loans from creditors to cover its costs. You know, this sounds so familiar.
Yeah, who are they borrowing the money from?
Well, I haven't gotten there quite yet.
But okay, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Yeah. The interesting thing is anybody out there that has a mutual fund that has bonds or municipal bonds in them, there's a very strong likelihood there are Puerto Rican bonds in there.
Oh, and you might not get your money back.
Well, at this point, that's not the concern. Okay. They did make their debt payment earlier last week, so they did not default like Greece did. But when I mention this, when I look at this decade-long economic struggle fueled by years of recession and slow economic growth, that's the same thing happening here in the United States. You know, people, our government has a tendency to point the finger and redirect people's attention.
No, really?
Yes. And by doing that, they're pointing their finger at Greece. Oh, look at Greece. Look at Portugal. Look at Spain. Mm-hmm. Look at Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. Look at Brazil. All of these other countries out there. How about looking at ourselves?
Yeah.
We spend way too much money. We are in debt up to our eyeballs that we can't afford. We have government regulation that is hampering the growth in this country. And we have a president that, you know, consistently through executive order thinks that he's going to change everything by just, you know, here we go with this overtime stuff. Oh, by executive order, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to change this so that overtime people get their time and a half. Does he not think, first of all, where are businesses going to get this money? Okay. Second of all, if businesses don't have the money, which a majority of them don't have, people are going to lose their jobs. They're going to lose their overtime. They're going to lose hours because they have to find the money somewhere.
You know what always concerns me about executive orders, no matter who's making them, is that don't they expire or they have a chance? Because they're not written into law at that point. It's whenever that president is no longer president, the next guy can actually just pull that back.
They can. Executive orders have the same effect of law.
Oh, okay.
But they're not passed by Congress, so therefore it would not take an act of Congress to change them. Mm. Since they're executive orders given by the president, again, the succeeding president can change those through executive order, which has been done.
That creates uncertainty in the market.
It does create uncertainty.
Or, I don't know.
The thing is, you know, when you look at Puerto Rico, when you look at Greece, when you look at the United States, instead of using this as a zero-sum game where Obama wants to take the money from the wealthy and give to the poor, how about bringing up the poor and the middle class through programs that are going to give them opportunity
to
make
money? Like what, though, is the question?
Which what?
Like what?
Well, give the money to employers to hire people, to give them training and so forth. Uh-huh. If the government were to give me money, for example, I'm a business owner. If the government were to pay me to give training to new employees, it doesn't cost you anything. Get those new employees in. Uh-huh. Train them. You're going to find good employees then that can work for the company, help to make it profitable. And now you have a person who has training. Uh-huh. They're very employable, and they're good for your company. That's just the tip of the iceberg. Everything it seems that Washington has done has been, you know, a hindrance on business. Look at Greece, for example. Why can't they get anybody out over there? Why can't they get business growth? Because they have government regulation. Here's an example of a couple years ago where a lady who owns a bookstore wanted to start serving coffee, just coffee, 2 years. And she still doesn't have a license to be able to serve coffee in her bookstore.
Is this in Greece or in the United States?
Oh, because
it could
be. Greece.
Okay, because you never know.
But things are getting much tougher here in the United States, too, with all of this regulation. So Puerto Rico has its problems here, and their municipal bonds in particular, they're at jeopardy right now. I don't know what they're going to do. They've asked about filing under bankruptcy Chapter 9. They're not allowed since they're not actually a state of the union. They're territory, so therefore they don't get that qualification.
Wouldn't that be interesting if they became a state, though?
That's all. That is interesting.
I mean, it's an interesting proposition because I think that's been bantered around before in the past.
It's been talked, but again, it's, you know, it's a political football, and of course, politics. You know, I look at our government and what makes them any less corrupt than any of the other governments around the world.
Yeah.
I just, you know.
Think of the jobs we could create by making new flags.
Well.
With 51 stars.
You know, if our government and the utopian society, if our government actually really cared about this country and Americans and the middle class, they would do things to create opportunities. But again, all it is they use our taxpayer dollars to buy votes, in essence, by, you know, giving projects to certain groups, which then buy votes, which allow them to stay in office. It's not about the great country of America. It's about their own, you know, political career.
I think that's the thing that always, no matter what form of government it is, the selfishness and, me taking care of number one, which is the person who's doing it, is something they don't necessarily put into the formula for, you know, and if everybody was really nice and everybody really cared about everybody, then, you know, everything would work fine. But people don't. So, yeah, that's why they have to have rules.
Career, their party, and then America. That seems to be their priority.
Yeah.
And so let's go ahead and get some commercial breaks in here, and we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Now back to Professor Money, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. Available online at ProfessorMoney.com and taking your calls at 330-370-1590. With more of Money Talks on 1590 WAKR.
And we welcome you back to Money Talks on this Saturday morning. As an article that U.S. News and World Report put out last week, we've heard a lot about the millennials and how they've been getting out of college, getting your degrees, and then moving back home with mom and dad, living in the basement. That seems to be the tired way to describe the millennials. Unfortunately, it's become a stereotype because it's true. Millennials have been known to graduate college, quit work, or just opt out of adult life and scurry back to the nest. But for every millennial who ran home to mommy and daddy, there's a set of parents who've allowed a grown child to linger in a state of arrested development without consequence, which begs the question, what is a loving parent to do? According to U.S. News and World Report, charge the kid rent, of course. Before boomers and millennials alike end up in a blind rage, understanding that extolling a little tough love is exactly the way parents can lead a stray millennial back to the expressway towards adulthood. Now, there is no shame in needing to head back home for some time to figure out steps. A lot has changed in how this world now works. Not that long ago, it was a standard that many young men and women would graduate from college and get married just a few months later. Well, today, few millennials are leaving college and heading straight down the aisle. Plus, the job market was slow-moving for those who graduated 4 to 8 years ago. Let's not forget to mention the massive student loan burden. So basically what the article says, it goes on to say that basically you have to start charging your millennials rent, which helps them to adapt to setting up a budget, paying for loans, going out with friends, and purchasing whatever they need. They do say that it doesn't have to be full market value. In fact, they recommend maybe $100, $150 a month will be just fine. And if you were to have a hard problem charging your child rent, then maybe make them pay for part of the utilities or buy some groceries several times during the month to help them contribute to the household bills. But it's not a good idea to let a child move back home and not have any financial responsibilities whatsoever. Rent is a good way to help. Many parents have trouble with the idea of charging rent. It doesn't feel right. Well, that's fine. Instead, use other means to do that. You can also, by taking that rent if you want, put it away into your own child's, make your own 401k plan so that when they leave home, all of a sudden you can surprise them with a check that says, here, this is for your savings and retirement. And that's another way that you can maybe get over the problem of charging your child rent. But U.S. News and World Report, says it's a good idea, it's only going to help the child, something to consider.
Do you make that part of people's financial plan when you do you have a kid living at home?
We definitely talk about it, absolutely, because it is something you've got to teach your kids the value of money. And by giving them a free ride, it doesn't help. That doesn't teach them anything.
Which is interesting. I think if you're going into you're a professional finance person, and if somebody were to talk to you about what they're doing with their finances, that would be something that you might actually put on the table. You know, where is your income and where is your money going? Because when somebody else lives in your house, it actually becomes more expensive.
Yeah. Absolutely. And not to stray off course too much, but we see a lot of people, too, especially as they get close to retirement or into retirement, you know, they're doing things to help the child because that child still in the 30s or 40s is needing economic help. Well, it's not your job to help them in the 30s and 40s. You know, you have to be concerned about your retirement, and too many people are jeopardizing their retirement by co-signing for house loans or auto loans or school loans. Therefore, they become responsible for them, giving money to kids because they need, they're in a financial quandary in their 30s or 40s. Not your job, you know. I'm sorry, but when a child is in their 40s, they're on their own. You know, the bank of mom and dad is closed.
Yeah.
Certainly there are those situations where you can be a helping hand, but, you know, too many kids nowadays have not been taught the proper use of finances, and therefore they're running into problems. And I see it all the time, you know, kids in their 30s, 40s, even 50s still haven't figured it out.
Yeah. So, wow. Yeah, rough.
We'll be right back, and it'll be time for the Money Talks Joke of the Week. Stay with us.
Now back to Professor Money, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. Available online at ProfessorMoney.com and taking your calls at 330-370-1590. With more of Money Talks on 1590 WAKR.
And we welcome you back. It is time for the Money Talks Joke of the Week.
What do you got for us this week?
I thought this one was kind of cute.
All right.
During a recent password audit by a company, it was found that an employee was using the following password: Mickey, Minnie, Pluto, Huey, Louie, Dewey, Donald, Goofy, and Columbus. When asked why she had such a long password, she rolled her eyes and said, "Hello, it has to be at least 8 characters, include at least one capital."
Especially for you, because anybody who is just tuning in or hasn't heard some of our previous programs, Richard is like insane about passwords. He has a spreadsheet and he's got millions of them. So that a password joke, oh my gosh. That's so funny.
The thing is, no one would crack that one. No one would be able to crack that.
No, you're right. Nobody would have guessed that. Yeah. I would never guess it in a million years.
You know? But it is, and, you know, you're talking about passwords. It has become so vital to really make sure that you are covered on those.
Yeah. Because you hear about all these hackings, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of these companies that have been hacked over the past year, they've gotten in through the easiest portals, which are guessing employees' passwords. And it's just like, you have to take a little bit of responsibility today and do these things right.
Yeah.
And you can't just, I mean, what are some of the top passwords out there? The word password, I mean, come on.
Or 1234.
Yeah. 1234567. It is a common password. I love you. I mean, these are the top 10 passwords out there.
And if somebody can get anybody, like a little piece of your information, sometimes they can guess because you have your kids' names or your dog's name or your, you know.
That's why you shouldn't use them. You should use something that's completely, does not make sense whatsoever. And unfortunately, it's very hard to memorize those.
Yeah.
So you have to write them down. And that's why I've recommended using a spreadsheet because this
way. I mean, I tease you about it, but it's probably a brilliant idea. It's just that most people don't take the time. So, yeah. And you work with very critical information because you have, you know, information that is, you know, your life savings, literally.
Right.
So you want to make sure that's very protected. So if somebody's working with you, nobody's going to get that information because you are like this, the password man.
And on top of that, just so people know too, what these financial companies, because our custodian for our clients is Fidelity, the efforts that they make. First of all, we have a username and a password, and then we have a token device which generates a random number that we have to put in order to access the software of Fidelity. So basically what it is there's no way that a hacker can get in because they do not have all the pieces of information and they can't randomly generate a number that matches up to a code.
Yeah.
So, you know, and more of these credit card companies are doing this, which is very important, and the banks and so forth. A lot of them at this point will also offer you where you put in a username, password, and then the next thing they'll do, like if you're trying to get in on the website, they'll send you a four-digit code on your cell phone.
Okay. So it's, nobody else could know it.
Nobody else would know it. And it's only good for like the next 5 minutes or 10 minutes. And you put that in and then you'll have access to your, you know, information online. But these are the steps that you have to take in order to protect your data. Otherwise, you know, hackers get in and they just steal it. So very important. But also have an interesting thing here with the U.S. News World Report, the 5 retirement lessons from Warren Buffett. And these were quite interesting. Most of you know who Warren Buffett is. He's the CEO of Berkshire Hathaway.
One of the richest guys in the world.
One of the top richest guys in the world, absolutely. Going to leave his fortune to the Belinda Gates, Bill and Belinda Gates Charity Foundation.
Much to the chagrin of his grandchildren, I think.
Well,
you know, not that that's bad. I think it's a wonderful thing that he does, and he tries to teach them responsibility.
He does.
Just what you were just talking about. You know, yes. He doesn't just hand it to them.
Yeah. No, because if you give people enough money, then there's no more motivation. There's no more desire to work. That's where they really ruin their lives. Mm-hmm. And so you can't do that. Now, you can give money during your death, like he's given to his children, so that they're taken care of, but not enough where they don't have to work the rest of their lives, too. I think that people realize, you know, working fulfills you as a person. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, but as we go on, he says, number one, invest for the long term. Many of us are short-sighted. We panic at every market crash or try to chase a quick buck. However, Buffett teaches us to invest for the long term. When Buffett buys a company, he thinks of the long-term value. He doesn't look for something that offers splashy returns in the short term. He looks for something with staying power. When investing for retirement, you need to think the same way. You won't be able to buy up whole companies, but you can invest for the long term through mutual funds and exchange-traded funds. Your future self will thank you. Have a purpose. Buffett has talked about the importance of having a purpose. You need to have an idea of what you want to do that gives you meaning to your life. Studies show that retirees often lose their health shortly after quitting when they don't have something to look forward to each day. Think about what you want to do with your life during retirement. Make it a new stage rather than an end. He also says, learn from the mistakes of others. There is no reason to repeat the mistakes of others. Instead, learn from them. Many people sold at the bottom of the market in early 2009. Those folks locked in their losses. If they had been willing to wait a few years, they would have seen tremendous gains instead. Don't panic just because everyone else is panicking, and pay attention to the mistakes that bring others down. When you learn from the mistakes of others, you're less likely to fall victim to them. Don't invest in the exotic. Buffett has talked about how he keeps enough cash on hand to meet his upcoming needs, but other than that, he wants his money working for them, but that doesn't mean that he's investing in exotic assets. You can be the same boring investor, focus on equities, and you will be likely to build your wealth over time without the stomach-churning volatility and the risk that comes with more exotic assets. And the last one, which we were just talking about, don't worry too much about leaving wealth to your children. While Buffett has said publicly that he wants his children and grandchildren to live fulfilling lives, he isn't taking care of everything for them. Indeed, a large portion of his wealth is going to charity, not to his posterity when he dies. And you can learn similar lessons. Don't be so worried about providing everything for your children that you neglect your own retirement. And don't be so concerned about leaving them a pile of money that you don't enjoy your retirement when it comes. Good advice from the Oracle, Warren Buffett.
Yes, the Oracle.
Yes. Now's the time to get on the phone lines for the Money Talks Quiz of the Week, 330-370-1590. That's 330-370-1590. We're going to take caller number 5 today. We'll be right back.
Now back to Professor Money, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. Available online at ProfessorMoney.com and taking your calls at 330-370-1590. With more of Money Talks on 1590 WAKR.
And we welcome you back. It is time for the Money Talks Quiz of the Week. And Sandy, who's our contestant?
We have Larry on the line. Hi, Larry. You're on the air.
All right. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Larry. Are you excited about this nice weather weekend?
Oh, isn't this perfect?
It is, isn't it?
It's about time, huh?
Yes.
I think the last 2 days have been, you know, just the weather's been warm. It hasn't been hot. It hasn't been humid. The skies have been, for the most part, nice and sunny. I mean, it's just been wonderful.
The weather gods will hear you.
Yes.
And they'll change it.
And anyway, that's Ohio.
Yeah.
It will change.
Yeah, we could get snow tomorrow afternoon.
I know. No!
Anyway.
There's somebody out there that's going, I remember that time on 4th of July when it snowed.
Yeah. All right, Larry, when was the first mutual fund available to investors? Was it 1924, 1933, or 1946? When was the first mutual fund available to investors?
Wow.
1924, 1933, or 1946?
Boy, I know John Bogle came out with his index fund. What? I'm trying to think. 46.
Well, I'll give you a little hint. It was through the company MFS, or Massachusetts Financial Services. There, I got it out.
I'll take the middle one, please.
1933.
Yes, sir.
Actually, it was 1924.
Really?
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah.
You know, what's interesting about that, I was thinking that all it hinges on the stock market crash. So if you were invested in something before 1929, that would have been affected by that.
Yes. Yep. 1929 crash. But it was 1924 that they came out with the first mutual fund. And, of course, as we look today, we've got, I don't know, somewhere close to like 23,000 different mutual funds that we can invest in. All right. The next question for you, Larry. The very first place that a person should start their retirement is in what? A Roth IRA, a 401k or 403b, or a CD? Where is the very first place that a person should start their retirement in? Roth IRA, 401k or 403b, or a CD? What do you think?
Larry, are you still there? Larry, are you still there? Did we lose Larry?
We lost Larry.
Oh, no. All right.
I don't know how that happened.
I don't know, because we haven't touched anything. Hey, Larry. Oh, I guess call us back if you're listening. Well, isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Don't know how that happened.
Well, that puts me on the spot. We at least we have Larry's information because everybody's always a winner here and gets the Bob Evans certificate.
Well, we'll see if you admit.
Oh, there he is. Okay. Hi, WAKR, Money Talks.
Hi, Larry was a dropout. Can I step in?
Well, we're waiting to see if Larry calls back.
Okay.
Why don't you hang on the line here?
Hang on. Okay. Hi, WAKR, Money Talks.
Good morning. This is Larry.
Hey, Larry.
Hey, Larry.
But we're like, hey, you know, I know it was a hard question, but you, gee whiz.
No, the answer I would give would be the 401k.
You're absolutely all correct.
Right.
Now, what's your reasoning behind that?
Well, because it's just so automatic for people.
Well, yeah, that's one of the points.
It comes off the top of your income.
Yes, it's pre-tax. It's automatic. But the thing about it is almost every company out there will give you a contribution match with your deposit. And that match is what really super ignites your growth and your compounding inside of that. You're not going to get that with a Roth. You're not going to get it with a CD or any other type of investment. You're getting free money from your employer. And so that is always the first place, and it's usually up to 6% seems to be the norm out there. And so you should at least contribute up to that 6%, get 100% of that match, then open up your Roth IRA, max out that, and if you have any money left, then up your contribution to your 401k. So very good, Larry.
Woo!
And my last question for you, now we're going to have to know, this was for a woman, the average age a woman retiring at age 65 today will live to, by today's statistics, will she live to age 83, age 88, or age 91? The average age that a woman will live to who's retiring today at age 65, will she live to age 83, age 88, or age 91?
Well, because she made it to 65, I'm going to guess 91.
We're not quite there yet.
Getting there, though.
But 88, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So.
Well, I wish she lives to 91.
That's right.
Yeah, there
you
go.
Yeah, I'm getting there. Yeah, it's an average, though, so, you know.
Of course.
Yeah, you got to go with statistics.
They do say, though, anybody graduating from, you know, high school today and getting into the job market, that they should plan on living to age 100. So they better get ready.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. That's very good advice.
All right.
We better get ready.
Larry, we're going to send you out your breakfast
okay.
to Bob Evans, and you enjoy your weekend, sir.
You too. Thank you so
Thanks,
much.
Thanks, Larry. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. So I would have guessed the oldest one too, actually, on the living long thing, because I think people are just living longer.
They are. And the thing is, I mean, if you just look over the past 15 years, how we've increased that mortality rate. You know, I'm listening last week, and they are talking about how close they are to conquering cancer.
Wow.
For example.
Yeah.
Look at how close they are to working with things with dementia and Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
You know, those are two of the big ones out there. Basically, what they've done right now is look at what they've done with people on cancer. So many people go into a permanent remission.
Yes.
You know?
I've had friends that have done that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they are getting, this was a doctor that was speaking, they are getting so close to actually curing many of the cancers that are out there. So you take all of these into consideration, and then you take into what the technology has done in the hospitals with transplants and so forth. And, you know, within the next decade, they say we're going to add another 10 years onto our lifespan.
Sky's the limit. Diabetes, I think, is another one where they're making great strides towards finding some kind of, I don't know if it's a permanent cure, but at least to be able to control it to a level where you're going to live to be really old.
Yeah. Very much so. So we have to be well aware of that. The point is financially is that
if you're going to live to be that old, you got to have some cash.
You better have some cash. Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's what you have to watch out for. And certainly these young kids, if they only recognize the fact that if they start early and they start with some discipline, and it doesn't have to be a massive amount of money, start putting away in their 20s, what they're going to do to help the retirement. Because basically you're going to be working 40, 45 years, 50 maybe years,
yeah.
and then you're going to be retired 30, 35, 40 years. So
that's a long time to not work and try to have the equal amount of income that you were making while you were working.
Well, you don't need an equal amount. You need, it depends, roughly about 70% or so.
Mm-hmm.
But your house should be paid off. You should have no debt. You should have your baskets of retirement money built up. That's your 401k. That's your IRAs. That's, of course, you're going to get some Social Security pension if you're still lucky enough to get one. These are the things that you have to do for yourself.
Yeah. So. You know, I always find interesting, too, is that you can't just pay your house off and never have to pay to live because you have to pay property taxes.
Well, property taxes, so upkeep, you have to consider insurance,
that. Oh, yeah, that's true.
Repairs.
Upkeep, something could break. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, so
I mean, you still
got
to mow the lawn, plant the flowers, and, you know. All these things still come into play. So, yeah, life isn't free.
No, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. Not at all. But the millennials still think so.
As long as mom and dad's paying
for it.
Mom
and dad.
Yeah.
Yep, she does my wash. She fixes my meals. I
Why
get to play
you?
Games all day.
Yeah.
But anyway, another show has come to an end. It's been a great pleasure to share the past hour with you. We always welcome the opportunity at Capital Financial Group to work with you as your personal financial advisor. Let us help you to eliminate the worries that come along with retirement and running out of money, and how do you plan for it, and what do you invest in? Well, that's what we can help you with. So give us a call. Our number is 330-668-6991. That's 330-668-6991. And as always, there's no charge for the initial consultation. 330-668-6991. Thanks so much for having us in today, and we'll see you right back here next Saturday at 7 on Money Talks. Have a great week.
This has been Money Talks with Richard Peterson, President of Capital Financial Group. This program is informational only and should not replace a financial consultation before investing your money. Registered financial advisors are key toward a balanced and responsible financial policy. This has been a paid program. 1590 WAKR and its parent company, the Rubber City Radio Group, are not responsible for its content.